Of all things in God's creation, all things in Christ's creation, of all things that he has ordained in this world, that he has set forth as a picture of his gospel and of Christ's love for his church, the institution of marriage is opposed and undermined far more greatly than just about anything else. We live in a day and an age where the world around us increasingly undermines, attacks, despises, and tramples underfoot marriage as God created it, marriage as God set it forth unto the world, marriage as it truly is. Of all things, this world opposes it. There has never been a time and an age like today when man has so greatly risen up against this. And in so doing, they are not simply changing marriage to suit their own ends, to suit the current social situation. Behind all the machinations of men, behind all the movements, behind all the changes that are brought about in society, deep down, whether consciously or unconsciously, mankind is taking his fist and shaking it at God, shaking it at his Son, shaking it at his church, and shaking it at the gospel. There are few things so fundamental to the very picture of the gospel, the order of God in this world, than is marriage. There is a great reason why marriage is under attack. Because as this world increasingly turns its back upon God, and God gives the world and the people in the world their own way, its own way, as he gives them up to a reprobate mind, as he tells us in Romans, as he allows them to do what they want, they depart from his ways, they depart from his order, and they undermine the fundamentals, including marriage. It's not coincidental. The current movement against marriage, which caused those who stand for it to stand up and be opposed and hated for their stance, bring about some of the greatest persecution and alienation of Christians that we have seen. Christianity was once respected in Britain and the Western world for generations. Now it is treated as the greatest evil, if truly believed and held to. There are many today who claim to be Christian and who are claiming and debating I'm trying to change what Christianity is and its view of things and its view of marriage in order to accommodate the evil around. So the Church of England, for example, even today discusses marriage and discusses services and discusses what can be done and what can't be done and what is right and what isn't right and what Christians believe and what they don't believe in order to accommodate the fashion and the times around it, in order not to be seen to be out of touch and out of step with what the evil minds of men all around them want, rather than be seen standing for that which is right, standing for that which was given to them from the beginning, the modern church would rather alter it to say, yes, we agree with you, dear world. So they do it with evolution, and they do it with marriage, and they will do it with whatever else comes along in which they find themselves standing against a world that wants to go another way. They'd rather not offend. They'd rather preach peace, peace when there is no peace. They would rather form a marriage, a union between the church and the evil in this world, then stand up for the truth and be hated and opposed. And if you take it to its logical conclusion, what they are doing is this. The professing church of our day would rather be married and united to Satan, the devil, and his children and his ways than to be married and united to Christ. It calls its name Christianity. It says it worships Jesus, and yet it unites itself to the ways, the thinking, the mind, the desire of Satan, the devil, and his children. They have redefined marriage by ceasing to be married to Christ and marrying the devil. And if that's your idea of marriage, and you begin it in this world in such a fashion, by uniting with the devil and despising Christ, then you will find that you will spend eternity in such a marriage. You wanted it, you desired it, you got it forever. Dear Church of England, dear Western world, if you wish to marry the devil and his ways, you will have him forevermore. But don't be surprised. You're either wed to Christ or you're wed to Satan. You're either wed to him from above or you're wed to him from below. But either way, you choose your partner and you're wed to him. And your ideas and your goals and your desires will either lead you to hell because you despise Christ, or you'll be wed to Christ. Nothing is under attack like marriage. And Christ spake of it in Mark's Gospel in chapter 10, when the Pharisees came unto him, asking him about divorce. Marriage has always been under attack, because there's always been those in this world that don't know God and want to accommodate their sin. We read in Mark 10, and Jesus arose from thence, and cometh into the coast of Judea by the farther side of Jordan, and the people resort unto him again. And as he was wont, he taught them again. And the Pharisees came to him and asked him, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife, tempting him? And he answered and said unto them, what did Moses command you? And they said, Moses suffered to write a bill of divorcement and to put her away. And Jesus answered and said unto them, for the hardness of your heart he wrote you this precept. But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. So then, they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. And in the house his disciples asked him again of the same matter. And he saith unto them, whosoever shall put away his wife and marry another, committeth adultery against her. And if a woman shall put away her husband and be married to another, she committeth adultery. From the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. So then they are no more twain, but one flesh. Christ is unequivocal in his answer to these questions about divorce, these questions which undermine marriage, and by extension, to any who should ask what marriage is, what marriage is about, his answer is plain. From the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. That is marriage. And that is marriage because it is a picture of the marriage of Christ to his bride, the church. And anything else is not marriage, and anything else destroys and tramples underfoot that picture of the gospel, because it hates the gospel, despises the gospel, and wants to undermine the gospel. As I said, we live in a day where marriage is under attack. There have never been as many who marry, who then divorce and separate, as in the generations in which we live. As a consequence, the younger generations, so many of them have abandoned marriage. Rather than becoming married, they simply live with their boyfriend or girlfriend, their partner, until such a time as maybe they want to have children and be seen as a little bit more respectable, perhaps, so that the children can say that they have a mother and father by the same name. Some don't even bother with that. But there's a great abandonment of marriage altogether, often driven by the pain and the suffering that the younger generations have experienced when their mothers and fathers have divorced and brought in trouble into the household. For marriage was given unto this world, marriage was given unto mankind by God for the good of mankind. God looked upon the first man, Adam, and said, "It is not good for man to be alone." And out of his side he took a rib, and from it he made woman and presented woman unto the man as his helpmeet, as one who was united to him, as one who was complementary to him, human like he's human, but different, having qualities the man doesn't have, and he having qualities she doesn't have, but together, united, they're perfect. And she was a help to him, and one to love him, and one to bring companionship to the man, and he to her. And through their union, through their love, through their marriage, they brought forth children. And they, as parents, are the perfect parents for children. To have both the loving care of the mother and the authority and leadership of the father. To have both the qualities that the man brings and the quality that the woman brings. That they might have the security of a safe and a comfortable home. God gave these things to the world because he knew it was for mankind's good. This is how children should be brought into the world, how they should grow up, and how they should be given security until that day when they leave their father and mother and marry their husband or marry their wife. But today, so many marriages end in divorce. Why do they end in divorce? Because man at heart is selfish. And when he becomes weary with one, he desires another. And when trouble comes in, he doesn't persevere. Although in the marriage vows people say for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer. People just want better and richer. They don't want worse and poorer. They're not prepared to endure worse and poorer. And work it through until better times come. As soon as trouble comes, they're off. And they look for better and richer elsewhere. How evil is the heart of man that he's prepared to bring so much pain and hatred upon both his wife or her upon her husband and upon the household and the children simply for selfish gain. How evil it is that a father could leave the family for someone else or a mother could leave the family for someone else. And yet it's rife. This is what the heart of man is like. This is what you're like. This is what I'm like. This is what we're all like. Left to ourselves. When God blesses a nation, he blesses the families in the nation. He puts love in the household. He keeps them together. But when a nation turns its back upon God, he sends judgment, and judgment comes in all sorts of fashions, and it comes into the household. The rise in divorce in this nation is directly linked to how the nation has turned its back upon God. It's turned its back upon the gospel, it despises the gospel, it goes after its own ways, and there's no surprise then that it turns its back upon marriage as it goes off in its evil ways. This particular chapter in Mark 10, having spoken about marriage and divorce in the opening verses, goes on to some other accounts, one of which is the man that comes unto Christ, calling him good master and asking how he may inherit eternal life. Christ tells him that he should keep the commandments, and he says, I've done all these things. And then Christ tells him that he should give up all that he have. But the young man is rich and is grieved. He goes away grieving, for he had great possessions. And Christ goes on to say, how hardly shall they that have riches enter into the kingdom of God? It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. So he speaks of riches and how riches lead people away from God. And then at the end of the chapter, we read of one who is blind, who when Christ passes by, he calls out from his blindness and darkness, Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me. Now these things are not disconnected. There's a connection. There's a connection between a society which undermines marriage and which seeks after riches and in which the people are blind. When you go after your own ways, your own things, your own desires, when you seek the riches which are here below, the pleasures which are here below, and you turn your back upon that which is from above, then you will inevitably turn from God's order in marriage, because your desire is set upon something else. And you do this because you're blind to the truth. And your only hope as one who's blind, as one who's consumed by riches and full of grief because you can't give them up, you can't turn and follow Christ. He can come unto you and say, well, just give up these things and follow me. You can't. You're blind. You can't make yourself see. You can't give up your love of this world and its ways. And you can't be faithful to a saviour, to a husband who loves his own and gave himself for his own. Despite what he is, you go another way because you're blind. We're all blind. We're all born like this. This is why we are like we are. And when God leaves us to what we are, society becomes what it is today. Marriage is undermined through divorce. It's undermined through its sheer rejection by a generation that can't be bothered with the institution of marriage, even though it's carnally married. But it goes from one partner to another partner as though it doesn't matter, bringing chaos in its wake. And it's undermined by the hideous reinvention of marriage, where male marries male and female marries female, as if children can be brought forth into the world in such a manner, when even nature itself tells them that this is crazy, this is foolish. But they're blind. And if you think that's acceptable, if you think that that can be called marriage, if you think for two men to dwell together is marriage, or two women to dwell together is marriage, if you want to call it marriage, do. But you're a fool. You're blind. That isn't marriage. From the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. Biology itself tells you. A man marries a woman. Children are brought forth into the world. That's God's creation. That's how it works. That's how we are. Anything else is but friendship. And nothing else but sin and gross desire, if wrongly brought forth. But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. The first man he made was Adam. Out of his side he took the rib and created Eve and presented her to him. And he said, "This is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh." And he loved her. And he was wed to her and united to her. And in this, from the beginning, God set forth a picture of the gospel. Adam is Christ. Eve, as we've seen before, is his bride, his church. And here we see from the beginning of time the gospel declared throughout all history that Christ, the Son of God, will be united with his people, his bride. He loves her and he gave himself for her. He laid down his life for her. When Eve was brought forth for Adam, she was taken out of his side when he slept. He was put into a great sleep. He, as it were, died. And God took out of his side a rib and made out of that rib a woman and presented to him. He rose again out of sleep and saw this bride. A picture of the death of Christ and the union of Christ with those for whom he died. When Christ died, he was wed to his people in death. And they were taken out of his side as the blood came forth from his side when the soldiers pierced him and blood poured forth. That people were taken out of his side. He bore their sins. Why did blood pour forth from Christ? Because he'd borne the sins of his people. They were judged in him. That's why he died. That's why he slept. And at the end of his death, when their sins were blotted out, when he paid the price of their sins, when judgment had fallen upon him, blood poured forth. Blood which washes away all sin. Blood which made that people pure, spotless, blameless, perfect. Out of Christ's side came his bride, came his church. They were wed to him as sinners. They brought about his death. They brought about the sleep. But when he rose again, the blood washed them. And they rose up with him as his bride. And he looked upon her pure and perfect, spotless and blameless, and loved her. And he loves her forevermore. His love caused him to come into this evil, sin-sick world. His love brought him to come into this world that despised him, that rejected him, that hated him. A world full of sinners like you and I. His love brought him into a place where you dwell, where people like you hate him and hate his order and hate his creation and hate marriage. You hate the gospel. But his love brought him where you and I are. And though we hated him, though mankind hated him, though mankind took up their arms against him and beat him and cast him out and cried out, "Crucify him," though men took him and nailed him to a cross, though men with wicked hands took nails and drove them through his hands and drove them through his feet and nailed him to a cross, though they lifted him up in the heat of the midday sun to die, and though they spat upon him and jeered at him and laughed at him and wanted him dead, yet he came. He came to where they were. He came to where you are. He came to this world knowing what you and I are like, or knowing what you and I would do to him. He came knowing that we would hate him, knowing that we would reject him, knowing that we would put him to death, because he loved his bride, the church. Did he love you? Though you hated him, though you pierced him, though you trod his gospel underfoot, though you hated his creation and hated his order and hated his church and hated the bride and hated marriage, though you hated all that was to do with him, all that he declared, all that he declares today, though you may hate him today, yet he set his love upon his people, that he set it upon you. Did the blood that came from his side wash you clean? Do you despise him this day? Do you despise those who speak of him this day? Do you despise those who speak of marriage this day? That marriage that set forth Christ and his church and his gospel, do you despise it? Well, you may. But his love transcends all that you are and all that you can do. We live in a world where people speak of love and promoting love. But ultimately their idea of love is a love where they should be loved, where we should love the wicked, but where they hate that which is right. They have no love for those who love Christ. They have no love for Christ. They have no love for the truth. Yet his love was set upon people like them, who hated the truth, who hated him, who hated the gospel, who hated the church. And yet he took that hatred upon himself, as though he was the one that hated. And he bore the judgment, so that he could take it away. So that people like that who hate, people like you who hate, though you speak of love, though you hate him, you may love others but you hate him. Though you speak of love and yet hate him and his truth, he took that hatred and bore it, that those for whom he died should be forgiven and should know his love that began before the world was. That was always there from the beginning of time and will always be there after time. A love that has no beginning and no end. A love that washes away hatred. From the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. A man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. Notice in this verse, in this message of marriage, that not only do we read of a man leaving his home and cleaving to his wife, but we read of the man leaving his father and mother and cleaving to his wife. There is an emphasis on the generations. Not only is there marriage in that generation, but there was marriage in the generation before and marriage in the generation before that. Nobody comes into this world except they have a father and a mother. That's universal. However it's performed, however science might dabble with things, everyone has a father and a mother. Whether you have a father and a mother living, whether you are born an orphan, in the beginning there was a father and a mother. Because that is marriage. No one has a father and a father, or a mother and a mother. In time there might be, in some households, a mother and a mother, supposedly. Or a father and a father, supposedly, but they're not. There may be one who's the father and one who's the mother. And the true mother or true father might long have gone. But everyone ultimately has a father and a mother. It sets the precedent. And this is why Christ says that a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife. Christ came into this world for his bride. For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. Not his partner, not his girlfriend, not somebody met at a nightclub. And certainly not his boyfriend, but his wife. His wife. When you marry, you marry. When you're united to your wife or your husband. Marriage is for life. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, singular. Not to wives, not to girlfriends, but his one wife. One committed, one husband, one wife, one mother, one father. Marriage is the union of one man with one woman, one husband, one wife, forever until death do us part. Not one wife, to then be divorced and marry another wife, to then be divorced and marry another wife, but one wife until death. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. So then they are no more twain, but one flesh. They're one flesh. Before they're married, they are a man and a woman. But when they're united, they're one flesh. They're united. They're companions. They're two halves of a whole. They're complementary. Eve was taken from the side of Adam as he slept and then brought to him. They're one flesh. This cannot be so unless it is male and female. And what a picture this is of Christ and his church. How close we see in the union of a man and a woman, how they are described as one flesh. Here her body is his body, his body is her body. They're both together, they're united. In God's eyes they're one flesh. Two people but one flesh. Two souls but one flesh. They're united. How close the union is. And what a picture of how close the church is unto Christ. They're one flesh, they're united. All that he is, she is. All that she is, he is. When Christ came into this world to die for his people, to save his people from their sins, he came for his bride and he took all that she was. So he found her in this world as one who'd gone astray. He found her as one who is blind. He found her as one who was taken up with the world and its ways. He found her as one who was full of the riches of this world and couldn't give them up. He found her as a sinner. He found her as one who was astray, a sheep wandered off. And he took all her wickedness, all her rebellion, all her hatred upon himself. All that she was became his. He didn't say, I'll have her, but I won't take her sin. But he took her sin and he bore her sin. All that she was, he became. He was made sin, that she might be made in him the righteousness of God. He bore her sins, that he might take them away and judge them in his own body on the tree. All that she was, he took as his own. he represented to her when God's justice and judgment came down upon the bride, the husband, Christ said, I'm the guilty one. She's my bride. Whatever she's done, I've done. Don't judge her, judge me. I will pay the price for her. I love her. That's what a husband does for his bride. He's hers and she's his. He takes responsibility for all that his wife does, all that she is. If she goes wrong, he'll pay the price. If she's in trouble, he'll do whatever it takes to bring her out of trouble. She's his. In Ephesians, we read of this. Ephesians 5, verse 22, we read, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Saviour of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify it and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth it and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. How Paul makes it plain here in Ephesians that the picture of marriage concerns Christ and his church. He quotes the same phrase that Christ uses. Christ says, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Paul writes, for we are members of his flesh and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. He says exactly the same thing regarding marriage, but he says it's a great mystery. I speak concerning Christ and the church. The picture of marriage, the reason why it's so important, the reason why the love of a husband for his wife and the love of a wife for a husband are so important is because the whole matter concerns Christ and his church. In marriage is a picture of God's order, God's creation, and God's gospel from the very beginning. As soon as you begin to undermine marriage, or question marriage, or redefine marriage, you attack Christ and the gospel. Christ loved his bride, the church. He loved her and gave himself for her. They are one. They are united. They're one flesh. The church is considered to be Christ. His righteousness is her righteousness. Her sin was made to be his sin. And he paid the price that she deserved to pay. He died. She died with him. He rose again. She rose again with him. They're one. And in this world, when we marry, we set that forth as an example. But when the world speaks of changing this marriage, when they speak of men marrying men and women marrying women, they attack the very message of marriage in the gospel. They say Christ is not wed to his church, and the church is not wed to Christ. They attack it, they trample it underfoot, they despise it. In their assault on marriage, they have attacked Christ and his people. The only people in society truly who stand against what this society is headlong racing into are those who defend marriage because Christ has set it forth unto us. The cancer in their eyes in society are those who love the truth. Never have the battle lines against Christ and his church been so greatly drawn as they have in this day and age, when the world rushes away from the truth and tries to speak of maintaining Christianity whilst undermining its very foundations. Anyone who supports this is attacking Christ and attacking his gospel. Now, you may well support it. If you're of this world, you may well support it. You may well support the fashions of this day. You may well support the flying of rainbow flags and all the proclamations of love and peace that this world proudly declares. In their folly, in their blindness, taking the message of the rainbow that God set forth unto this world after he had judged its wickedness and delivered his people Noah and his family in an ark. Having sent such judgment upon this world and its wickedness, God said, I will not judge this world again in the same manner until I come in judgment on the last day. He set forth his gospel, and he said unto this world, you will not be judged if you know my son, if you love my son, if you're wed to my son. But this world that flies its rainbow has run away from that God and brings itself unto the very judgment against sin that God sent to Noah. That judgment will come down upon them in fire. It will come down upon you in fire if you carry on in this mad career. If you carry on in the darkness and the blindness of your sin, rejecting the truth of the gospel. But God has said plainly to every generation from the beginning, and he says plainly to this day and generation, and to you, whoever you are today, he says plainly, without hesitation, from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. So then they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. God has brought this forth. God created this world. God sustains this world. And God says, this is marriage. This is the gospel. This is my son. And this is my church. You are either wed to my son, or you are wed to the devil and his ways. You speak of marriage. You speak of love. You either love the devil, you're either wed to him, you're either wed to the riches of this world, you're either wed to the darkness here below, or you are wed to my son, who by grace delivered you from judgment, spared you from wrath, declared peace and love into your soul, waved a rainbow of truth over your head, declared peace and grace unto you, took your sin and washed you clean. Either you're wed to him because he came unto you in the gospel and opened your blind eyes, like he opened the blind eyes of Bartimaeus, and caused you to see, or you are wed to the devil in the darkness. Oh, has he come your way? Has Jesus, the Son of David, passed your way with his gospel and declared unto you the truth as it is from the beginning? And have you in the darkness, in your blindness, heard his voice? Heard his voice in power? And have you cried out, Jesus, thou Son of David, have mercy on me. Have mercy on me. What God have joined together, let not man put asunder. But man does put asunder, doesn't he? You do put it asunder. You do try to tear away God's order. You do try to tear it down. You try to put the gospel asunder. You try to put the truth asunder. You try to put Christians asunder. You try to get away from all of them and all that they say. You try to trample them underfoot. You try to silence them. You try to silence their views. You try to silence their message because it doesn't support your evil ways. When men attack marriage, when they attack the truth, when they attack the church, when they attack the message of the gospel, it isn't just God's order and God's creation which they attack. When they attack marriage, it's not just his order from the beginning they attack. They attack what it presents. They attack and reject the gospel. Now do you, in your darkness, in your blindness, like Bartimaeus in the dark, just follow what's in the dark? Or when the Son of God passes you by and says unto you, from the beginning I declared the truth. From the beginning God made them male and female. From the beginning I loved my bride. From the beginning I went to the cross in the place of my bride. From the beginning I declared I will take her sin, your sin, your corruption, and I will bear the price. From the beginning I was willing to die that sinners might live. From the beginning I knew they would hate me. From the beginning I knew they'd hate me today. From the beginning I knew the world would rise up against me. From the beginning I knew the world would take the bands of God and try to put them asunder. From the beginning I knew the heathen would rage. From the beginning, though they hated me, I loved them. From the beginning, though my bride hated me, I loved her. And I took her sin and I bore it and I took the judgment. And I took it away, and I took my blood, and I washed her in it. From the beginning I loved her. From the beginning I preached my gospel. From the beginning I sent truth out into this world, to the four corners of this world, to everyone, that they might hear. From the beginning I have preached from heaven on high the gospel. Oh, has he come your way with that gospel? And you, blind man, sat by the highway side, have you heard the Son of God speak from the beginning? Have you heard him? Do you cry out, Jesus, thou Son of David, have mercy on me? Oh God, give you grace. God, open your blind eyes. God, call you to cry, Jesus, thou Son of David, have mercy on me.